Welcome to the Rest and Recovery Podcast. This is a podcast on life's most effective healing tools, rest and recovery, through expert advice, wellness methods, and self-care. Okay, well, welcome to another episode of the Rest and Recovery Podcast. I have Renata Namy, and I think I got her name right on that one. Practiced a lot on that. She's a registered dental hygienist and certified orofacial myologist, which we'll get into what that is exactly, and the founder of MyoMoves, as well as the collaborative organization Airway Circle. So, Renata, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so this is the Rest and Recovery Podcast, so I think this falls into the both categories, although initially probably recovery, but really interested to learn more as I learned about what you're doing with Airway Circle and your organization, MyoMoves. But give a little background about you first on, so you dental hygienist, start out there, and then maybe we can help clarify for everyone what a myologist is and terms.
Of course. So I have been a dental hygienist since 2010. And probably 6 years in, I went to an continuing education course, and they started talking about orofacial myology or orofacial myofunctional therapy. And immediately I was drawn in because they talk a lot about breastfeeding and craniofacial development and feeding, you know, little kids, how they should be eating, everything that you have to do in order for somebody to grow to their full potential, for their upper jaw, lower jaw, and whole face to grow to their full potential so they're healthier. And I fell in love immediately. I knew that was my calling, and I started studying, and I haven't stopped. So in the United States, it's mainly speech pathologists and dental hygienists who are allowed to go into this field.
Okay.
It is not a profession per se yet. It's a modality of speech pathology and dental hygienist, but you don't learn this in school. It's not in universities. It's not a course. We don't have a board. So you have to take extra courses on your own to be able to learn how to practice.
Okay. Interesting. So what exactly is oral facial myology, like the various terms you discussed or just mentioned?
Yeah, so it is the study of muscle function, orofacial muscle function. So a physical therapist usually learns about whole body muscle function. And we focus on head and neck. So what are functions that we do with the muscles of the face? Chewing, swallowing, speaking, which dental hygienists, of course, do not do speech. Breathing, oral rest posture. So the way that you're standing there with your tongue and your lips in a certain place, in a certain position, that's actually a function of your body. So we work on that also. And if you make sure that you have the tongue in the right position, lips closed, and you're breathing in and out of your nose, your body is just going to work better because you're going to get more oxygen whenever, or more oxygen is going to be released from hemoglobin into the tissues, your organs, and your muscles. So your system just works more properly if those things are in place.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if I remember correctly, through the nose also increases the nitric oxide, which we don't get through the mouth.
100%. Nitric oxide is formed in the paranasal sinuses. So the air actually has to go to the middle and upper turbinates in order for this nitric oxide to be formed. That is why a lot of times when somebody has turbinate surgery or they reduce the turbinates, they usually reduce the inferior turbinate. So there's three right here, the one on the bottom they reduce. And a lot of times whenever they breathe, the air, instead of going up into the middle and the superior turbinates, it goes into the back of the throat immediately. So it kind of bypasses that. And even though you're a nasal breather, you might not be getting all of the benefits of nasal breathing. So it's really interesting.
Okay. Because I've been studying nasal breathing a little bit over the years, and it, you know, and I started watching recently some of your videos and about the placement, and I got really concerned about my own placement. So what is the optimal positioning of the tongue to achieve that?
So the tongue should always be suctioned into your palate. It should not touch your teeth. It should be about a millimeter away from all of your teeth, the front part of the tongue and the back part of the tongue. Everything should create a vacuum seal with the roof of your mouth. We all know that we have different skeletal structures and not everybody's going to be able to achieve that. You guys can tell that I sound a little funny right now because I'm going through palatal expansion. I have a device called a Marpi on the roof of my mouth, which is opening the suture again because I was very, very narrow. And that's going to allow, when I take all this stuff out, it's going to allow my tongue to fit better in my palate. Whenever your tongue stays there and you practice for your tongue to stay up there all day and all night, that will protect your airway because your tongue will not fall back into your airway and cause an obstruction whenever you sleep at night.
Yeah.
And so yes, it should be suctioned all the way up there, but you have to do it as well as your structure will allow you. We all adapt, we all compensate. So that's what a myofunctional therapist also is going to help you, is find the proper position for you and help you, you know, keep your tongue there as much as you can with the limitations that each patient presents with.
Okay. And so if it's not, without sounding like a whole bunch of alarms, like to be concerned, but, you know, what are some contributing factors that if you're not positioned well, that can negatively affect you?
Of course. So if your tongue is low, what are some things that will cause the tongue to be low or in between your teeth in the mouth? Number one, if you have a tongue restriction, there's a little piece of connective tissue underneath your tongue called a frenum. That frenum can be too short or it can attach in the wrong part of the tongue. And that's going to restrict the tongue movement. So it's going to become very difficult for those people to lift, especially the back part of the tongue, to the roof of the mouth.
So is that tongue tied?
Yeah. So that's the regular term, tongue tied.
Okay.
And it doesn't mean that you have to have a speech issue. That's usually what we, you know, put together, speech issue, tongue tied, but it's not necessarily true. Like I said, we all are different people. We have different structures, so we're going to compensate differently. Mm-hmm. Not every person with a tongue tie is going to have the same symptoms. Some will have breastfeeding issues and then feeding issues. Some will have speech issues. Some will have the low tongue posture that can contribute to mouth breathing. If your tongue is low, you're more likely to mouth breathe. Your tongue is the scaffold of your mouth. It really helps hold everything in place. If your tongue is positioned way up there, applying a little bit of pressure, it's almost like I like to say that your head is a building and the pressure of your tongue up there, they're the support beams. They're going to help improve your oral facial development. Now, if your tongue is low, the building kind of collapses. It doesn't have that support. So tongue tie is one that could contribute to your tongue being low.
Okay.
The second thing that can happen if somebody has tons of allergies and they're always, you know, have stuffy nose and enlarged tonsils and adenoids, enlarged turbinates, if they have a difficult time breathing, they're going to have to open their mouth. Therefore, the tongue has to stay low. And everybody can try this at home. If you suction your tongue to the roof of your mouth and you create that palatal seal and you open with your tongue up there, try to take a breath in through your mouth. You just can't. So tongue position makes you a nasal breather, the tongue in the right place.
Okay.
But we are all able to breathe through our nose and to breathe through our mouth as a survival mechanism. We have to be able to do it. So if you cannot breathe through your nose, automatically your tongue is going to get low and you're going to open your mouth to be able to take the next breath and keep yourself alive.
Okay. Breathing is kind of important, right? So you mentioned earlier though, also, and I've heard this yesterday in a conversation in regards to some sleep concerns with the way the tongue drops or the jaw may shift, that is a contributor to sleep apnea. Is this something that can help support that, or like, what would be is there exercises for your tongue, like weightlifting?
Yes, there is. But I do have to say that sleep apnea is a very complex diagnosis. Mm-hmm. and you have to work with a sleep physician. You have to work with different professionals who are going to be looking at every aspect of the disease. It depends on where the obstruction happens. When somebody has obstructive sleep apnea, the back of the tongue.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the Rest and Recovery Podcast. Thank you for listening, as always, and sharing the content. And in order to make all of this happen, it does require some resource, and I am fortunate to be able to introduce two sponsors that are supporting the podcast to make this happen. So please check them out. And first, I want to introduce Fit Insider. It's F-I-T-T, Insider. If you're obsessed with health and fitness as I am, then you'll absolutely love Fit Insider. I've been following them for close to a year now, and subscribe to their free newsletter. It's packed with industry trends, news, tech, startup information, and much, much more. You know, anything from wearables to health optimization to what's new, what's trending in the market to what are the key staples, what are the big companies doing to pivot, expand, and grow to advance the health and wellness market. And, you know, Fit Insider, F-I-T-T, again, Fit Insider, is a tremendous resource for that. Not to mention, they have a weekly podcast. They offer a jobs board if you're looking to get into the health and wellness space as a career pivot. They also have an investment fund and other resources for those in the health tech space for operators. So trust me, if you're looking for something to really understand and have a finger on the pulse of the health and wellness market, fitinsider.com is definitely the one to bookmark. So please check them out. Link is in the show notes, and I would encourage you to go check them out. Thank you.
And fall into the airway, and it can obstruct with a soft palate. They could have enlarged tonsils, which same thing, the tongue falls back and it causes an obstruction. They could have an obstruction in the vocal cords with the epiglottis. There's just so many things that we don't know unless they have a procedure called a DISE, which is a drug-induced sleep endoscopy. When they put the patient to sleep and they put a little camera in the nose and they can see where the obstruction is happening. So whenever we have somebody that comes to us for myofunctional therapy and they do have a sleep issue, they're always working with a sleep physician at the same time as they are working with us, because still CPAP is the golden standard. We have to encourage them to use their CPAP or a mandibular advancement appliance, whatever the sleep physician is recommending and working with them. But with myofunctional therapy, we try to strengthen the muscles of the soft palate and the muscles of the back of the tongue. Mm-hmm. There are little nerve endings on the muscles of the soft palate that signal your airway to stay open at night. And the same thing, if we can practice and there and the structure allows for the back of the tongue to stay up, you're less likely to have an obstruction at night if the obstruction is right there on the tongue and the soft palate.
Okay. That's pretty interesting to know, but just so I'm clear too, and everyone listening, you know, it's more collaboration and what you do in support of, you know, sleep professionals who focus on sleep apnea. And if you have that to work with someone like that.
100%. That's where Airway Circle comes in. We have been connecting with professionals from all over the world who are looking at all these things and who are working to collaborate with other specialties to be able to help the patient better. And we have incredible sleep physicians all over the world that we've been in contact with and learning from them. And we have to be open. Yeah. Not everything that we learned in school is going to stay true, you know, in our profession for the rest of our career. So it's very important for us to keep reading research and keep connecting with other specialties who are going to teach us what they're looking at, as well as we can teach them what we're looking at. And like that, we can increase the patient's prognosis.
Yeah, I think that's a great message. I think for everyone, and regardless of what aspect of your health, is to have, you know, a whole team. And it's great to see an organization like Airway, like looking at that 360 view of health, from that perspective to really make sure that, you know, we see in part and we know in part. We can't know everything, and collaboration is that gap closure.
100%. We need to understand what other professionals are looking at. You know, we don't have to learn how to do it. We just have to understand exactly what they are looking at and their thought process behind their recommendations. So we know how to better work with them also. You know, whenever you build that relationship with somebody and you've been working with them for a long time, you kind of already know what they're going to recommend. So it's great for the patient because it's going to be a second reassurance. You know, when they're talking to me, it's going to be another reassurance that they are choosing the right professional and they are choosing the right, making the right decision for their treatment.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause at the end of the day, I mean, I think every person in the medical and health field is hoping to get better outcomes for their clients. And if you don't know, then that's okay. You just find a partner to collaborate, to close that gap. So that's huge. It's awesome.
100%. And the more we learn, the more we realize how much we don't know.
So true. So true. I learned that a long time ago. I started out in the IT field, and it that was the thing is, like, the more you learn, the less you know, because it just keeps peeling things off the onion, so to speak.
100%. We got to keep learning. And it's interesting because everybody in this field were so passionate, you know, since these are not things that you learn in universities. You really have to have a personal story. So either you have a child who has an airway issue or a grandchild who couldn't breastfeed because they had a tongue tie, or you start realizing that you had these issues growing up. So almost everybody in the airway field kind of has this personal story that drives them, because it's not easy. Sometimes we're meeting at 10 o'clock at night with other professionals to talk about patients and, you know, discuss their treatment plan. It is, we go above and beyond taking courses, traveling, spending money, just so we can better help our patients.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you mentioned tongue tied, and it's something that I've learned over the last, I guess, couple of years, how prominent it really is. And I don't know if you can validate or confirm what that is, but, you know, what can one do? You mentioned the little ones breastfeeding. Let's start there. What can, you know, a mom do, or how would they become aware that maybe that is the issue and it's not something else?
That's a great question. So let's talk a little bit about history of tongue ties. Back in the day, when people would have babies at home, the midwives would have a very long pinky fingernail. And as soon as the baby was born, they would go underneath the tongue and clip the frenum if it was restricted.
Really?
With the pinky of their, yes, with their fingernail. Because back in the day, there were no bottles, there was no formula. If babies could not breastfeed, they were not going to survive. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why also having somebody else feed, nurse your baby was super common. And wet nursing, I think it's called. But nowadays, or actually World War II came along, and all of a sudden all the men were gone and women had to start working. When that shift happened in society, moms could no longer breastfeed as long as they were able to. That's when Gerber came out. That's when formulas came out and bottles, because we had to cater to what was going on at the time. At that point, pediatricians started recommending baby food at 4 months old. And that is why baby food has that consistency. It is very soft, and it is easier for a four-month-old baby to be able to swallow. So, but we all know that babies do not need anything else besides breast milk or formula until 6 months old. Unfortunately, some of those pediatricians still kept that in their mind, and they still recommend it to this day. But that's the thought process behind why all of this happened. And a lot of people, you know, just got used to it. A lot of professionals, if there's any struggles with breastfeeding, it's immediately just the formula. It's fine. You know, fed is best. It's not a big deal. But the thing is that these professionals do not have this extra training about craniofacial development and what exactly about breastfeeding is so important. Wow. Yes, nutrition is great, but it's not only about nutrition. the mechanism of breastfeeding helps develop your facial structures. It encourages you to be a nasal breather because they have to be able to, you know, breathe through their nose when they are nursing.
Right.
They're going to the gym, they're working out those muscles. And we all know whenever we do not work out the muscles, the bone kind of gets weaker, right? That happens everywhere. So the more this baby is working out those muscles during breastfeeding, the better they're going to do with feeding. They're going to be able to chew better and swallow better. And all of those orofacial functions that we're looking at. I'm not really sure if I answered your question. So
no, you did. No, yeah, that's awesome.
Yes, no. There's something called apoptosis. Apoptosis happens about 34 weeks gestation. That's when the connective tissue underneath your tongue is supposed to release. So, you know, we all have webbed fingers whenever we're in the womb until a certain point, and then apoptosis happens and it's the same thing. It releases the tissue in between our fingers. Once in a blue moon, a baby will be born with webbed fingers still.
Okay.
There is no question in the medical community that that needs to be released. You know, it's not a clinical just because it's going to look better. It's because of function.
Right.
But the tongue tie is the same thing. It's because of function. And a lot of people think that there are more tongue ties right now, but I don't believe there's more. I feel like there's more awareness. All of a sudden, women are becoming their own advocates, and they're learning more about, you know, the benefits of breastfeeding, and they want to do it. And it's not easy. It is a learning process. So looking for an IBCLC, who is an international board certified lactation consultant, is one of my first recommendations while you're still pregnant. And ask questions, have a little questionnaire, you know. The same thing, IBCLCs don't have a lot of training in tongue ties, but some of them will have those extra courses that they decided to take on their own to be able to evaluate.
Okay.
Again, working with a team, researching on your own. There are several books out there. Tongue Tie by Dr. Richard Baxter is a great one to start with. But familiarizing yourself with what are certain symptoms. A mom should not have nipple pain. Low weight gain could be a sign of a tongue tie. A colic, a fussy baby, clicking whenever they are trying to nurse. So some of those things could indicate, but they are not all related to tongue tie. It could be something else. So working with a professional who specializes in feeding babies, like an IBCLC, it's really the best thing to do.
Okay, that's awesome advice. So then start with the IBLC, but would you also, recommend to work with someone like yourself or within the Airway Circle community to the support, or is it start with your own self-education and work with an IBLC, and then from there, depending on the severity or issues?
So if it is a baby, 100% IBCLC. After that, and there's some body work also. We have an incredible directory on Airway Circle that you can find a craniosacral therapist that might help with a breastfeeding baby. Babies are like stuck in the womb for a long time. When they come out, a lot of times they are just tight. Those muscles need to kind of be released. So working with a body professional is very beneficial. When it comes to myofunctional therapy, true myofunctional therapy, the child needs to sit in front of you and copy what you're doing. So ideally, we start myofunctional therapy at around age 4 or 5. So anybody younger than that, they could have an orofacial muscle dysfunction. So what do? I usually recommend those babies or kids to go work with an occupational therapist or a speech pathologist who has oral motor training and feeding training. Because there's a lot of manual therapy that can be done that is similar to myofunctional therapy that can help the orofacial muscle dysfunction. In Brazil, where I'm from, only speech pathologists are able to practice myofunctional therapy because there's no such thing as a dental hygienist down there. And they are trained in feeding babies. So they do a lot of work with nursing mothers also. And they're able to do a lot of manual therapy, lasers and some other things that we can't do in the United States. but they do myofunctional therapy in babies over there. But because they have the extra training, that training has not arrived in the US yet.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. I'm familiar with cranial sacral therapy. I'm pretty interesting that you can also use that. So that's awesome. So when it comes to, let's progress in age, you have an older child or even an adult. You mentioned some of the examples. What would be a path to either assess or recommendations? Like, do you work, you know, I asked about four questions there. Why don't we take a step back? You had mentioned your own process right now. And before we jump all the device in your mouth, maybe speak to that a little bit on the what and the why you're using that device and what it is.
Perfect. So we all started when I was born. I breastfed about 4 months. And then I remember being extremely picky eater. And why was I a picky eater? You know, I was very, and I don't like that word. I usually call them selective eaters. And a lot of times when your tongue does not rest in your palate, and you're snoring at night, you're sleeping with your mouth open, food doesn't taste the same and it doesn't feel the same. So it could be a sensory issue. It could be a flavor issue, but just because, you know, you're not breathing well through your nose. We all know whenever we're sick, whenever we eat food, it doesn't taste the same, right? We kind of lose flavor a little bit. So it kind of goes along those lines. I had allergic rhinitis growing up. So very allergic to indoor dust, to the dust mites. And that caused me to grow up as a mouth breather. When that happens, the tongue stays low and my tongue cannot function how it's supposed to. So I engage other muscles to do the function of the tongue. So I'm overworking certain muscles. Some of them are the cheek muscles and the lip muscles, or the lip muscle, that are going to squeeze everything whenever I'm trying to swallow to be able to create the vacuum seal, because the tongue can't do it. All of that overwork of the muscle causes my structure, and the mouth breathing causes my structure to not develop appropriately. So the roof of the mouth becomes very narrow and very high vaulted. If the roof of my mouth goes way up and becomes high vaulted, what's right above that? It's my nose. So it's going to affect even more my nasal breathing, because now the roof of my mouth is taking space of my nasal cavity. And I no longer have that much room to be able to breathe through my nose.
Okay.
So because of all of those structural changes, I really would benefit from a palatal expander. At 14 years old, I started bugging my mom that I wanted braces because I thought they were cool. She took me in and I got a palatal expander and I talked funny like I am right now, and I thought was the coolest thing, which I don't believe that anymore. but anyway, so I got a palatal expander and then I moved to the United States and I forgot my palatal expander at home. Every time you put a device in there to expand your upper jaw, as soon as it comes out, you will relapse a little bit. Everybody does.
Okay.
The best way to maintain what you have gained is by keeping your tongue in the roof of your mouth, your lips closed, and breathing in and out of your nose. So your tongue is the best space maintainer. But I did not do my functional therapy, so my tongue was still low because I still had allergies. I did not treat what was causing my issues. So fast forward, I'm 38 years old right now, and I've done all the myofunctional therapy I can do. So I used to snore. I used to drool at night. I woke up exhausted. I had insomnia. I did not sleep well. I had all the sleep issues and, you know, lack of focus and brain fog during the day. So after myofunctional therapy that I, of course, did on myself, and I taped my mouth for 6 months because I didn't have, you know, enlarged tonsils or adenoids. I was able to then sleep with my mouth closed, no longer drool, no longer snore, and feel so much better during the day, have so much more energy. But still, my tongue cannot fully fit in the roof of my mouth. and I still had a lot of nasal resistance. So whenever I take a breath in, there's still a lot of resistance because there's not a lot of room up there.
Yeah.
I knew that by expanding the roof of the mouth, for every millimeter of opening in between my two front teeth, it's actually 4 millimeters of opening in your nasal cavity.
Oh, wow.
So all of a sudden, when I take a breath in now, it is so much easier. The air flows so much better. So that is one of the reasons why I decided to do this. Another, of course, if my tongue can fit up there, it's less likely that it will fall in the back of my airway. I still would find myself at times waking up with my mouth super dry, and I would open my mouth a little bit just because my tongue was still low, because the roof of my mouth was so high and I had a posterior tongue tie. So slowly I've been fixing all of those things. So if there's anybody out there with any of those symptoms, you know, allergies, mouth breathing, you're just exhausted, even though you feel like you're sleeping or you're in bed long enough, there has to be a reason. And just investigating, working with a myofunctional therapist, with a sleep physician, ENT, so we can find out exactly what we can do to help you sleep better.
That is huge. That's great advice. And I know that's, my brain is going in about six different directions right now.
Because I am too, I'm sorry.
No. And that's a great thing. And just helping people understand, because, you know, I've made the joke, it's like all diseases have the same symptoms, but the root cause is never the same. And mm-hmm. So that's like you're saying with the sleep issues, there's probably six different reasons why. And one of them might be the structure of your mouth.
Exactly.
Probably a bigger one than we realize.
Yeah, there's a study that just came out by Dr. Eric Feller from Penn University, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And he did several measurements of hard tissue and soft tissue. The soft tissue research hasn't come out yet. But he found out that the transverse measurement of the palate, so the sideways measurement, how wide your upper palate is, has a direct correlation with the risk for obstructive sleep apnea.
Wow.
So, I mean, it is not, you know, I have no way right now to prove that by expanding my palate, I will not develop sleep apnea in the future. But I can tell you that I have the same exact structure as my father. And my father has full-blown sleep apnea, severe sleep apnea. So am I going to help myself by expanding my palate? I hope so, but I can't prove, because I cannot do a study where I clone myself, you know,
and I
live so many years with the narrow palate and so many years with a wider palate with my tongue up. So we don't really know. I'm just hoping that this is really going to help. And I mean, I can already tell the difference. So I'm very happy with it.
I was just going to ask you, you mentioned that, and you were talking about, you know, it 1 millimeter equals 4 for your nasal. And I think you've mm-hmm. had this for a little bit. So are you feeling a difference?
Definitely. So I think there's something called a caudal maneuver. I think it's called a caudal maneuver. You can take a breath in through your nose, and you can try this. Close your mouth, take a deep breath in through your nose. Okay, feel how much air you can feel in there. Now you're going to put both of your fingers next to your nose, next to your nostrils. You're going to put your nostrils out and then up toward your eyes and take another breath in. How much difference percentage-wise do you feel better breathing?
How much percentage?
Is it 10% better? Is it 50% better?
Yeah, I would say a good 15-20%.
Okay, for me, before expansion was 100% better.
Really?
It was night and day when I did that maneuver, and that usually is an indication of nasal valve collapse.
Wow.
And there's a surgery to correct that. So now after I've done some expansion, when I do this maneuver, I may notice about a 10 or 15% difference only. So I can already tell that the air is flowing so much better with way less resistance.
Okay. That's awesome. That's great to hear. So we're kind of creeping up on time, but what would you say is, maybe the top two or three actions for people to become aware for themselves, for their kids, to help ensure that, you know, this is a key aspect of health. Breathing is number one of survival, where to go and how to go about the process of investigating.
So there are so many amazing free resources out there right now that you guys can learn from. You can check out both of my Instagram accounts. One is at Area Circle and the other one is at Maya Moves. And there are podcasts, there are, you know, we have a podcast YouTube channel. So start looking at some of those things because you might notice some signs and symptoms that you would like to investigate further. A lot of times, you know, we hear from people, no, but I sleep long enough or my child is in bed 10 hours. There's no way they sleep just fine.
Yeah.
But unless you have an in-lab sleep study, you're not really sure of the quality of that sleep. You know, you can have your eyes closed and you can be in bed, but are you reaching every sleep stage and staying long enough in those sleep stages? And a lot of the issues that we deal with in airway when it comes to sleep, they are breathing issues. So 100%, if you cannot breathe well in and out of your nose, you're very likely not to have really good quality of sleep. So start paying attention. Do you catch your kids with their mouth open? At rest, you know, of course, if you're climbing up the stairs or you're working out, you're more likely to open your mouth to breathe. But at rest, nobody should be sleeping or standing there with their mouth open. Yeah. So if there's a first thing that I recommend people doing is just start paying attention for yourself and those around you if your lips are closed or open during the day at rest.
That's a great one because I know I've noticed it for myself where, you know, we stare at screens most of the day or you're watching mm-hmm. a movie and you just don't lose sight. And I've noticed for my family, even myself, all of a sudden my mouth is kind of widening open as mm-hmm. I'm watching this thing. And then I'm, oh, I got to close my mouth up. Mm-hmm. That those little things that seem insignificant will add it up. Mm-hmm. I like to call pennies add up to dollars.
Yes, 100%. And as soon as you become a little bit more aware, and I say the lips just because it's a little bit easier to pay attention to them. But the really most important thing is the tongue. You can have your lips open, but if your tongue is up, you're still going to be a nasal breather. So whenever you get a little bit better at paying attention to the lips, then start focusing on your tongue. And you can do fun things like, you know, for kids, you can do mini M&Ms or goldfish or Cheerios, whatever you decide to use. For adults, you can do a mint leaf or basil leaves and just hold it with your tongue up there. You can make a game out of it. But just practice holding up there and eventually you get used to keeping your tongue in the right spot.
Okay. Awesome. Well, you already shared where to find you, which is, I think, you know, great information for those listening. I want to thank you for your passion for doing this. I think it's something that definitely needs to become more aware for folks to be aware of that. I know I started reviewing it and thinking I might need an expander myself. but I'd like to close some things out with a couple personal questions, nothing kind of a hot seat, nothing too heavy, but what are you reading right now?
Oh, that's a great question. I am finishing up Traction.
Traction?
Mm-hmm. Business book.
Cool.
I heard it's a business Bible.
Okay. I'll have to check that one out. What are you listening to right now? Be it music or podcast?
Oh my goodness. I'm really into this guy. What the song is called Acoustic. What is his name? I can't remember his name, but he's really, really good. Acoustic is the name of the song. You guys can look it up.
Okay, I'll look it up.
And in terms of podcasts, I'm really into The Diary of a CEO. He has some great like lifestyle and health. They talk a lot about sleep too and how to optimize your health and meditating, and they talk some business.
Great. It's
a really good
I'll have to check that one out. And last one, what is your go-to rest and recovery method?
I like to take once in a once in a while, I'll take a little bit of time for myself because I am a single mom. I have two businesses and I don't ever stop. I work insane hours. But when I do have a little bit of time to myself, I've been making a point to go to a spa by myself, where I can just get a massage or sit alone or be in a sauna and just spend, if I have 5 minutes, if I have 10 minutes, you know, I just take that time. And while I'm in there, I'm usually meditating.
Great. Yeah, definitely need to do that and find those micro moments, those micro rests throughout the week. Great advice.
Well, Renata,
what's that?
It will help you keep going because it's not easy.
Absolutely. Well, Renata, thank you so much for your time and expertise. And yeah, look forward to connecting again and maybe meet sometime at one of these conferences.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Rest and Recovery Podcast. Please share this information far and wide. Rate, review, would appreciate all of the support. And thank you so much for listening. You can also check out episodes on any of your favorite podcast platforms, such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Or you can check out the website at www.berestedbewell.com. Thanks and have a great day.